Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my six decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Unbreakable with Jay Glazer, a mental health podcast, helping you out of the gray and into the blue. Now, here's Jay Glazer.
Welcome in, everybody, to Unbreakable, a mental health podcast with Jay Glazer. And this podcast, it allows me to kind of run the gamut on guests, but also allows me to bring my best friends on. So how cool is this? I get paid to talk to my best friends. And when I say best friends, I truly mean it in the case of this man. He and I became friends a long time ago. We've kind of had a similar journey as far as we didn't do it the conventional way. We did it different ways. But man, when I tell you all that I have battle buddies that I kind of lean into or reach out to when I'm having a bad day, and a lot of times they don't know that's why I'm reaching out. This is one of those guests. He is on every show on the Food Network. He is everybody's favorite restaurateur and chef, but he's also one of my favorite humans on the planet because I've leaned into him on many occasions when he just thinks I'm calling for a laugh, or he thinks I'm calling just to fuck around with him over something. But it's really for something a lot deeper than that. It is the one and only Guy Fieri. What is happening, my brother? Now, I'm calling you by your proper name because you fucking finally got my name right after 20 years of friendship.
Listen, Jay Glaze, I'll tell you, it's funny that you say it that way, that you reference the friendship that way, because we met right around this time.
Yep, Super Bowl time.
It's Super Bowl, and I could tell in 5 minutes whether or not I'm going to be friends with somebody and what level of friends will be. And I don't meet people as crazy as me very often, and you're crazier, fortunately. But no, it's been a great friendship, and I think that it goes both ways in terms of needing support and that shoulder and that confidence and that, you know, that buddy that's been through the good, the bad, and the ugly. And if you haven't been through the good, the bad, and the ugly, I don't think you really have sometimes you don't really have the ability to understand sometimes the depth of issues that people are facing. But you've done it for me. You've done it for everybody that I've known you to be, you know, everybody that you've been around. Yeah. So,
well, you know, it's interesting too. Like two of us met at the Dallas Super Bowl, whatever year that was, you know, 15, 20 years ago, something along those lines. We were doing a show he was on the pregame show with Fox, but then I saw him out at a party. I think I was with the cast of Sons of Anarchy, and you wouldn't let me leave the party because you're like, dude, I've got to talk to you. The way you've done your career. And I'm like, no, the way you're doing your career. And you and I think we were kind of at the same point. Like, people were kind of like almost trying to figure us out at that time. We're two crazy men that were just doing it different than everybody else. And people were almost trying to figure us both out.
I think that was it. I don't know who is not letting who leave the party, but let's not get into semantics right now. Let's not, or we can talk about you, me, Sean Payton, and Snoop Dogg in New Orleans.
But all right, I want to hit your career. And, you know, people see what you are now. People have no idea how you started. And so I want to go back to the beginning. Like, how did you get even break into where you were, where you became a chef? Like, bring us back to the beginning. It's incredible. I love the journey.
I like how you just dropped in break in, Jay. That's really nice because I know what you're going to end up telling people, and that's not.
I'm not going to talk about that. I'm not going to talk about you breaking into my house at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm not going to do it. I just won't. That's, I won't do it.
You,
I won't do
I'm it. Not the one that lost the key. You
I'm not
your assistant. That's your fault. You almost got me killed.
I didn't almost get you killed. You decided to be Batman and scale my house 20 feet and break into my house. I didn't forget my key.
Otherwise,
I forgot the code.
Outside. Otherwise, we're sleeping outside.
Anyhow, I forgot my code.
I knew you were going to do this.
Anyway, go ahead.
I knew I was getting drugged in this. Let's talk about something positive. So anyhow, I grew up in Northern California. If you ever saw the movie Outbreak with Dustin Hoffman, that's the little town that I was raised in, a little town called Ferndale. Amazing place. If you ever get a chance to go see it, amazing place. I just shot a show about it, a one-hour show on Food Network, guy's hometown. Flavor Town to Ferndale. That's the name of the town. Oh, wow. But so I grew up in this town. My parents both worked. They had a small business, a Western clothing store, and both really hardworking people, both good cooks. And in 1976, I was eating sushi and spinach pasta. And I mean, my parents were really advanced in food at that age, or my age. So long story short, the deal in my family was whoever cooked got to make a decision what we were eating. And I mean, I was eating at my friend's house, and they were having things like meatloaf and meatballs and so forth. And we weren't having that. We were having steamed salmon and bulgur and you know, broccoli and asparagus. I mean, it was just very different world of food in my house.
So they're really your first teachers then.
Yeah. But the thing was, is I knew I had this craving. It's so funny because my craving then was meat and all that kind of stuff. And now I'm back to where my parents started me as a kid. I'm a huge vegetable grains fan and raw food fan. And so anyhow, so I started cooking, and I remember the day I cooked my first dish, about 9, and I cooked a steak.
9 years old.
9 years old.
Wow.
But my parents worked. So I knew that if I could do something to help the family, that it would be a really cool thing to do. So I cooked a steak, and all I knew was butter and soy sauce. I mean, those are just two things I loved. And I cooked the steak and I put it there, and my parents sit down, and they were so amazed that I had made dinner. They walked in. My dad goes, "What are you doing?" And I go, "Mom said I could." And my mom looks at me and goes, "Well, he was complaining that we didn't eat any meat." And I said, if you want a steak, then you cook it. So I went to the store, got the steak, came home, and I cooked it. My dad takes a bite of the steak, and I'm like, "He's going to kill me." And he looks at me and goes, "Might be the best steak I've ever had."
Wow.
Dunzo. That was it. Wait a second. If I cook, I don't have to do the dishes. If I cook, we get to eat meat. And if I cook, I make people happy. I'm like, man, this is my jam. And so that became that was the genesis of it. And then as time went on, and I mean, I cook, Jay, I would stay home. I would fake sick from school. We got the Julia Childs, or I don't know. It was one of the cookbooks. And I was just reading it, and I'm like, wait a second. They give you the answers to make this stuff? It's right here. Just follow the, I mean, I'm like, this is awesome. And so I started cooking anything I could get my hands on. When I was about 14, we had exchange students from Norway, and we had an exchange student the next year from Sweden. I wanted to be an exchange student, but my high school didn't teach language until you were a junior and senior, and they only taught Spanish. So we had a friend of a friend came to Thanksgiving, and he was a wine cork salesman from France, and his name was Pierre Lachaud. And I sat next to Pierre at Thanksgiving, and I said, "Pierre, I want to go to France. Can you get me there?" And he's looking at this, and maybe I was 13. He's like, "Yeah, maybe I could. Do you speak French?" I go, "No." And he goes, "Speak French and then talk to me." So I went to my parents and said, "I want to learn to speak French." My dad's okay. He says, "Why?" And I said, "I want to go to France. I want to be an exchange student." He says, "I'll make you a deal. If you could pass at one year of conversational French at the junior college, then I'll let you go." So I wrote Pierre. I said, "Pierre, I'm going to take French at the junior college. And if I pass, my dad will let me go to France." Pierre says, "If you pass, I'll get you into a high school in a town called Chantilly." We would say Chantilly.
Right.
That's where the Chantilly racetrack, Chantilly cream.
Right,
that's
right, right.
A famous area. So anyhow, I'm working this deal. I'm 14. So I'm working the deal. So I get to my sophomore year in high school. I register for the class at the junior college. My mom has to drive me at lunch from high school to the junior college because I can't drive. I don't have a driver's license. I go to the class. I take the French class.
It's unbelievable.
I pass with a beer. All I had to do was pass with a beer better. Then I got to drive. The second semester I got to drive. I pass. I can't speak a word of French when I pass. I just got to take the test. But I understood the concept of the language, and maybe I had a vocabulary about 5 or 6 words, but I could pass the class. And so my parents say yes. Pierre knows an old guy that fought with the Americans in the war. He's a principal of a high school. He says, "Yes, you can come to my high school." I live in a boarding house. I go to the high school, and And that was it, man. And I got on that plane. You know, we talk about Unbreakable. I got on that plane. I was 16. I just turned 16. I just got my driver's license. I was so excited to drive. And in France, you can't drive till you're 18. And I got on that plane and I cried. What am I doing? I'm 16. I'm leaving my mom, dad, and my little sister for a year.
For your passion, though.
But I mean, like, take off a big bite and then have to chew it.
Right.
And I got there.
And you get thrown right in the deep end, is what you're saying. Yeah.
Huge deep end. Didn't speak the language. Learned how to speak the language when I was there. I mean, there was a line of how do you say that? Kept a note, a pad and paper. If someone would say a word to me, I'd write the word down. I'd get home at night to my room because I didn't live with a family. I lived in a boarding house. And I would conjugate the verb and conjugate it past tense, future tense. And then I'd put it on the wall. And if it was a noun, I'd make the translation, put it on the wall. And then that's how I learned the language. And by the time I left, I could speak at about at a fifth grade level. I could read at about a second grade level, write at about a first grade level, second grade level. But I could get through it. I mean, I could go anywhere I wanted. It's when I ate food in France. I was 16. I ate food in France and that was it, man. I knew. I wrote my parents. I said, I know what I'm going to be. I know what I'm going to do. Came back, never finished high school, went straight into college, graduated college.
Early. Wait. How do you not finish high school and go straight to college? Or GED?
Because I took, no. Again, Jay, it's just like you, brother. It's a little bit of the hustle.
Okay.
I had taken the junior college classes with the permission of the school and my parents. So I was already in the system. So I just went back to the junior college and just signed up for more classes. So the high school calls my senior year. Everybody's driving to school for the senior year. You know, kind of the parade of cars going in. And I just peel off and drive and go to Eureka, which is the big town where I'm from, or by my town. And the counselor and the principal called my dad and said, hey, guy didn't show up for the first day of school. And my dad said, yeah, I don't think guy's coming back. Not coming back. What do you mean he's not coming back? Yeah, I think he's going to go to college. He can't go to college. He doesn't have the, and he's like, well, I don't know. You have to talk to the guy about that. They keep calling me. And by then I was enrolled in school, had a job working as a flambe captain, as a tableside cook at a fine dining restaurant, went on to college and Sacramento College. And then I went to UNLV, graduated UNLV, came out of there, got into running restaurants that opened my first restaurant when I was 26. Did the restaurants, opened up.
What was that first restaurant?
Johnny Garlic's.
Okay.
So you're in Johnny, California. So we came up to wine country. I didn't want to be quite back in Ferndale up in Northern California. I didn't want to be in San Francisco. I didn't want to be in a big city. I wanted to raise my family in a cultural environment where we had good connection to the farms and the community and there were cultural, community events and street fairs and farmers markets and that kind of stuff. I wanted to be very in touch with my kids' schools. You know, I wanted to be in a big little town.
But how did you get the money to open your first restaurant?
Well, that's another deal, Jay. So I went to college in Vegas and I bet it all on red. No, I'm just kidding.
I wouldn't put it past you.
I was not a gambler. But I was the great pawn shop because I always had money. I worked my butt off all through. I paid my way through college. That was a deal. I didn't want my parents paying for college. As soon as I was independent, I'm like, you did your job. Thank you very much. And I have the best parents in the world. I love my mom and dad and couldn't say thank you enough. But I'm like, I can do this. I can do it on my own. And so I paid my way through college. And so I was very frugal with my money, but I always had money. My dad was always the thing about have money in your pocket. So people would come to me in the dorm or in the and say, like, hey, man, I got this football bet coming up and you want to buy a TV? I'm like, well, yeah, you know, I got 20 bucks. I'll give you. No, it's just a $200 TV. I said, well, I'll hold the TV. You win the money. You just give me back. You double my money back and we're good. Otherwise, I keep the TV. It got shady, Jay. Anyhow, the point was when I opened Johnny Garlic's with my buddy or this guy who was another manager in a restaurant chain that I worked with, we found a great deal on a restaurant. We tried to get a loan with the loan process was going to take too long. This was a got to get the deal done today. I only had 5,000 bucks to my name. Lori was pregnant with Hunter. We had a car with 400,000 miles on it, a pickup truck and two Rottweilers. I called my mom and dad. I said, I found the place. I got the deal. I can't get this loan to go through and I need to make this happen. My dad goes, I guess, hang on a second. Penny, guy's on the phone. He found the restaurant deal. You good? He goes, yeah. He goes, all right, we're going to mortgage the house. How much you need?
Wow.
So my parents are 1 year from retiring from their business, our home that I was raised in, and my dad mortgages $50,000 off it and gives and lends me $50,000. I paid it back in 6 months.
Wow.
But that was how it started.
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Okay. And then, well, so that's, which is great. I want people to understand this too. Every time we have a guest come on and they talk about success, it is about hustle. It's about outworking the world. That's how your dreams come true, right? You're the luckiest guy in the world when you outwork everybody in the damn room.
Is that
right?
Luck?
Right? Well, I'm saying your luck comes because you're the fucking guy outworking the world. That's what I'm saying. It happens for you. Like I walked in that giant locker room in 1993. And I'm like, all right. I'm going to do it different than everybody else, and I'll be the last motherfucker standing here. I will outwork them, not by a little, but by a lot. And that's how that overnight success comes. That's how that quote, that luck comes. It's not luck. You're right. It's because we take matters into our own hands and outwork people or do it different. So now, then you want to talk a bit about a different route. Tell people
about the Food Network. Let me touch on that for 1 second, Jay. I want to say something about that because I want to add to what you're saying. So under this arm, back in the day, was just this tattoo of this horseshoe. And I put that horseshoe on my arm because everybody said I was lucky. It's like guy always wins. Guy all in. And I used to go around talking about how lucky I was. And an old guy who I have his tattoo on my arm, this guy named Jack LaVar. Jack LaVar was probably one of the biggest, besides my dad, Jack LaVar was probably one of the biggest influences. And we lost Jack, but not too soon because he taught me a lot. And one of the things he said to me goes, stop saying you're lucky because it's not luck. He said, you have spent your life working your ass off, educating yourself, and most importantly, you surround yourself with great people. He says, you have an army of friends, an army of colleagues, and you make things happen. Things don't happen to you. You make things happen. And that's what you are, Jay. Mm-hmm. This isn't luck. This is determination and drive and will and focus. And never say die attitude and being unbreakable. And that's one of the reasons that I think you and I are so close is that nothing was ever given to us. My parents made, I think the most my mom and dad ever made in their life was $40,000 in 1 year.
Yeah, we didn't open doors. We kicked doors down.
That's the whole point. So it's not, it has nothing to do with luck. What it has to do with is setting a plan. What it has to do with is determination. What it has, so all of those words all equal getting the goal or having the success, and luck has nothing to do with it. Right, so I don't want people, here's the thing, Jay, I don't want someone to look back at it and say, I'm unlucky. I lost my little sister 12 years ago. My dad got pancreatic cancer 5 years ago and then just beat liver cancer 2 months ago. You want to talk about luck. Right. If we were going to go into the luck category, I got bad luck. I don't play that. That's bullshit.
I love that, dude. I love it. So you open Johnny Garlic's, but then you kicked another door down. Tell us how you got on to the Food Network, because I love this fucking story. And most people don't know this.
Well, I read that
book. This story's not told enough.
I read that book called You Too Can Be on Television by Jay Glazer.
It's one page long.
It's
a scratchy stiff book.
Stick drawing, you, right. TV.
Paint by number. Yeah. Yes.
Really well done. Forward by Michael Strahan. You want to talk about this? So I'm always the one that's encouraging people. I try to push people all the time to not talk about it, but to do it. And, you know, there's a great story of a guy that wants to win the lottery and wants to donate all the money to Goodwill and to people and helping. And he's finally so distraught after 5 years, 10 years of trying to win the lottery that he's going to end it all. And he says, they can't believe that, you know, he's prayed for so long and it's not happening. Skies part and the booming voice comes down and says, could you just at least buy a lottery ticket? You know, don't talk about it happening. Right. Don't think about it happening. Don't wish it was going to happen. Put it into action. And I've always been that guy telling my friends. I mean, I've pushed more of my friends into business. One of my best friends, Ariel, has this salon. And I told him from day one, whenever this building comes for sale, you buy this building. And it came for sale. And he's like, how do I do this? And I said, we're going to do it. However, we got to do it. And he persevered through it. He bought his first big building. So I've always been that guy. Well, a show comes on the Food Network and it's called The Next Food Network Star. I don't watch TV. Quite frankly, I'd never even watched the Food Network. Not one time. I saw 1 5-minute clip of Rachel Ray and I'm like, wow, look at that girl go. But I'd never seen the Food Network because I'm a chef. I own restaurants and I don't watch TV really a lot anyways, except for Fox football. I said it before you did. but I don't watch a lot of TV. So the second season is coming and everybody told me the first season, man, you guys should be on the show. You should be on the show. I'm like, I don't get it. They said it's like Food Network, American Idol. I'm like, okay, whatever. So I get pushed enough and finally I send in a demo tape and the demo tape is ridiculous. It's such a, I'm mocking it so bad because I don't want to do it. I mean, really, why do I want to go on TV, compete with a bunch of people? I've seen some reality TV stuff and then all the bullshit and then get kicked off. And I said, I'm successful. At that time, I had 4 restaurants. I was doing great. And one day I said, okay, I push everybody else. I'm trying to set the example for my sons. Ryder hadn't been born yet. And I said, all right, I'll send the tape in. So I sent the DVD in and I get picked. So I go on the show and I go on to it with this attitude. I'm kind of like, hey, you know what? I'll just take this positive opportunity. Never been to New York, never met Emerald. Let me just see what this is like. I show up in a leather jacket, shorts and flip flops, middle of November in New York, snow on the ground. And I walk into a room and everybody's buttoned up in white chef coats. I'm like, oh boy, we ain't Northern California anymore. And I didn't squeeze it too tight. I just did what I did. I just who I am. Wasn't going to change. They said, jump up on that rock and look in the camera and say, I am the next Food Network star. And I go, F you. I'm not saying that. Because I know what you guys will do with that. You'll take that and put it out there, and I'm going to look like the biggest, you know, jerk in the world. I said, I'm not saying any of that stuff. I said, I'm just here. You want me? Here's what you get. And I ended up winning. So I ended up winning the show, and I had a show called Guy's Big Bite, which did great. Now it's called Guy's Ranch Kitchen. It's been running for a long time. This has been 16 years now. But the next show they gave me a pilot show, and I did the pilot, and it was called Gotta Get It. And it was a show about kitchen equipment and gadgets, like you pour cream and sugar in a ball that's frozen and you kick it around the yard and makes ice cream. Or you have a oven that's, you know, Bluetooth, and think 15 years ago, 16 years ago, Bluetooth talks to your phone. You can turn your oven on from, you know, your office. So I did the thing, and the pilot, I did this pilot. I don't know what a pilot is. And I did it. And they said, the pilot got picked up for 10 episodes. And I'm like, oh man. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm not going to be able to do that. And they're like, what? And I'm like, no, I can't do that. You did the pilot. I said, well, I don't know what doing a pilot means. I thought you got that. I said, I think the show sucks. I said, I'm not a gadget chef. Right. I'm just a regular guy. You know, I don't have a avocado slicer when you peel it kind of thing. I just do the way we're supposed to do it. So then the president of that production company calls me, rips me. Says, I'm sorry, I'm not doing it. Then finally the president of the Food Network calls me, Brooke Johnson calls me. She says, you're turning down a primetime show. Why did you apply for our show? I said, because I had to do it to prove that I could do it. She said, so you don't want to be a Food Network star? I said, I would love to do a show, but the show's got to resonate with me. I'm not going to fake this. I'm not an actor. She says, you know, you could be losing your whole future with Food Network. I said, I apologize. I'm not trying to be somebody. I'm not. Which authenticity is huge to me. And so that was it, man. Everybody was pissed. And I didn't have an agent at the time. But everybody around me was like, whoa. You crazy? And then they came back 6 months later and said, okay, we're going to give you one more try. We have a show called Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. I said, that sounds like me. Dives? I'm down. And that's what started it.
Wow. Could you ever have imagined? Like when at one point did you realize like, oh my God, my life has changed.
When I was in Dallas for Ritz Crackers, standing on the Fox stage with this bulldog, that's working me over faster, quicker, funnier, wittier than me. I went, wow, man, I'm actually going somewhere with this stuff. I don't know, Jay. It's been, when I look at the things that, you know, I did an event the other day or a couple months ago with Tim McGraw. Love Tim McGraw. Great guy. And we did a fundraiser raising money for veterans, active military and first responders. I did a food and wine side of things and an auction. Tim did a concert. We only did it for 500 people. Well, then we had a celebrity softball tournament the next day. Just a small group of people. We raised over $1 million. But more importantly, we raised a ton of awareness. And as you know, because you work with veterans a ton and you know what is needed inside of this. It's just, if the world could really comprehend what veterans go through, they would be, they would stop in their tracks and say, wait a second.
I want you to go back to Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. At what point, when you're doing that show, you realize, oh my God, I'm not just the guy from Johnny Garlic's anymore. Like, oh my God, shit has changed.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford,
a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
None of it really hit me right between the eyes, like really got me. Doing Make-A-Wish Foundation, which was probably my favorite thing that I've ever done with my career, working with kids that are terminally ill, having my sister, lost my sister to cancer. That was something like when these kids could go do anything, they could go anywhere, they could meet anybody they want. I'm surprised how many celebrities won't participate in Make-A-Wish. That still blows my mind. But for me, it was like, they want to be with me. They want to, you know, so these kids would come to Triple D and I would spend. So that was probably one of the big like wow moments. Like that's, you know, but I'll be honest with you. And this, not to sound Hollywoody, but when I got my star in Hollywood, I had restaurants right around the corner from Hollywood Boulevard and from where all the stars are. And I remember walking by them going to the bank. When that happened, my dad had just beat pancreatic cancer. Matthew McConaughey came and spoke on my behalf. Hunter spoke on my behalf. A bunch of my friends and fans were there. That was the moment I kind of went, unless they rip up the sidewalks in Hollywood, my grandkids' grandkids will see that name. And it was that, and people were like, is this a dream come true? I said, I'm a hippie kid from Ferndale. Okay. I never even a million years anticipated that that would happen.
That morning, folks, we talk about, you know, I've talked a lot on this show about loyalty. I knew how important this was to Guy. Guy knows this now. I had a back surgery that morning and I scheduled it for 6 a.m.
So
it's a procedure so I can get to the star to be there for my brother, right? And I was all sorts of propofol out.
Probably had more fun than anybody.
But I was there for you on your big day. And that's what I want people to understand. That loyalty is a dying art, and it's beautiful. And that's what we need to do. And, man, to see you up there that day with, again, I was a little hazy from the anesthesia, but I'm sitting up there, too. I'm going, oh, my God, Matthew McConaughey's introducing him. And, like, look what he's become. But the difference is, from the day I met you to now, you've never changed. The authenticity has stayed the same. And that's where people, I think they looked at us a certain way. These fucking crazy guys, who are these guys? But we've never changed. So the authenticity is what our equity really is.
You just touched on something, Jay, that I think we have to flex on more often. And I don't know why that's my word these days. Lean into, flex on. We always assume that people know how much we love them and how much we respect them and how much we honor them and how much we would do for them. And unfortunately, we have this perception in our mind that we don't often explain or share or lean into as we need to. You did that day. I mean, you do all the time. Jay doesn't send me messages, you guys. He doesn't send me text messages. He sends me recordings, which are great. I mean, because you really can get the sense. You can get the inflection. You can get the you can get all the different modulation and the dramatic pause and the whole thing. I think they're way better than a text message.
And then when I don't hear from you, I'll send them to you just to make sure, because I know you're so busy, that your head's on straight.
Yeah, that's what we do. But right. The thing is I think, and that's a great thing. It's part of your book, Jay, which I've shared your book with so many people. And it's so interesting because you gave me like 10 books and I have them in my office and I think I'm down to like two. Because it'll be every once in a while when someone will be here and we'll be talking and they'll kind of be giving me some of this because I'm, you know, one of the older guys in my group. And someone will be talking about it and say, my cousin's going through this thing. I go, you know what? I got this buddy. You know who Jay Glazer is? I said, he wrote this book and he does this program with these veterans. I said, you got to take this book. And they're like, it's your copy. I'm like, it's my only copy.
Which is also called Unbreakable, by the way, right?
It's my only copy, but go ahead and take it. And I've had more response from doing that with people. But the point is, lean in and share that message. So I'm sharing the message with a great friend who's helping a cousin or one of my great friends who needs help. And we have so much power. We don't exercise our power as friends and family, I think, as often as we need to. We're so busy and there's social media and there's all the blah, 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 all this stuff going on. And we really do have the power to move the pendulum of energy and spirit
and mental health, yes,
and so forth, more than we know we do, or more than we exercise that we do.
And that's the whole thing with, you know, mental health, because of social media, we all kind of think our lives suck. We're all comparing ourselves to somebody else. We're all looking down at our phones constantly, and we're losing that connection. So by me talking about this and giving it words and showing other people, man, I struggle. I'm at the top of my game, and I struggle now just as much as I ever have. Maybe a little less now. I've evolved because now I understand how to open up to people more and to show my vulnerability more, knowing that there's strength in that, knowing I can call Guy Fieri when I'm struggling and that, man, I got people there for me and I don't have to suffer alone anymore and suffer in silence. It's huge. And that's what our jobs are. That's what we need
shame.
To do.
That's the thing that I think we have to get over. And social media is, honestly, there's really positive aspects of it.
It's awful.
But then there's really negative aspects of it. And what I always try to remind people of is you have to do things. If you want your car to run great, you have to do things to your car. If you want to continue the life of your car, you got to wash it so it doesn't rust. You know, you wash and wax it. Got to change the oil so it runs properly. Got to change the brakes, change the tires. You got to clean it. You got to give it some love. You got to take care of it if you want it to perform. Well, we don't think that it got to do the same thing with the brain and the body.
Right.
We need to exercise. And I'm not saying everybody has to be as ripped as Jay. We have to eat properly. You know, we don't, thanks for the random flex, Jay, right in the middle. Just a random flex. Okay. But my 17-year-old son, Ryder, who's a junior in high school, and we're talking about, he says, you know, I really want to get ready for my senior year and playing ball. And I said, then let's get focused on what you're eating. I said, because it's like me putting bad gas in the car. Right. So we need to exercise, even if it's just getting out walking, get out of the house. Mm-hmm. We need to eat properly and eat in proper increments at proper times. We need to have the discipline of communication. We need to step outside of our comfort zone of just sitting in the house, watching TV or playing on social media, and make sure that we have human contact and interaction. There's all these little simple principles. Basically, it's all the stuff they taught you in kindergarten.
Yeah.
And take care of yourself. Feel good about yourself. Get your hair cut. Shave. Wear clean clothes. I mean, do these things that add to your self-value. And I just look at this all the time when I see someone spiraling or getting, and I have a good friend of mine who, well, I'll watch him starting to dip and I'll catch him. And I'm like, hold up. What is up? And I know what that means. And I'm like, okay, well, let's go right to the beginning. Have you been going to the gym? No. Okay. Well, let's go right now. You and me. It's 3 p.m. and I had already worked out. Let's just go. Let's go for a walk. Let's go for a hike.
That's a great battle.
Get that positive endorphins going. Don't sit there and talk to them about it. Right. You know, what have you been eating? Let's go to the store. Okay. This is how you make farro. Farro, chicken breast, you know, some green beans. Eat this. Quit eating this sugar-laden shit right. That sends you on these spikes that drops you down into the sugar that's in food. Processed foods, probably the biggest headache we're giving ourselves. But these things like energy drinks and so forth, I mean, in moderation, when things are right. But otherwise, what we're doing is we're putting these chemicals in our body, or people putting chemicals in their body that's messing with their head. And if you can think about the hangover that you get from alcohol coming down from that and how discombobulated you feel, the sugar hangover, sugar is the biggest drug in the world.
Right. Yeah. So, all right, before I let you go here, two quick things. One, you know, I'm having you on here Super Bowl week as my guest because that's when you and I met at the Super Bowl. But man, you have kind of, you know, carved your own niche here at the Super Bowl. Tell us what you got going this week.
Well, I'm going to be carrying Jay's bags and of course, making sure that he's doing good.
Spotting me at the gym.
And again, yeah, following you to the gym. I just stand there and make sure that I keep Jay with a granola bar and, you know, juice. I love the Super Bowl. I love sporting events and I love the crescendo. I went to Wimbledon one time. Amazing. I went to the Olympics one time. Amazing. I want to go to World Cup. I go to NBA All-Stars, one of the greatest sporting events in the world. But the Super Bowl.
Ain't nothing like it.
It is. It's the big dance. Yeah. It's the everything in sports. So for years, so I was beyond thrilled when I got to go to my first Super Bowl, go to every Super Bowl that I have since I've had the opportunity. My kids love going, but this year, so every year I've gone and I've done for the last 5 years, I've done this great tailgate program and I've been talking to people. And I'm like, I want to take it to the next level. And you know, I'm about the people and trying to make fun shit happen. And so I got with a group called Medium Rare. And we've done some amazing projects together. We did a project together last year called Restaurant Reboot, where we raised a bunch of money and gave away scholarships to people to get into the restaurant industry, $25,000 scholarships to help people, because we need industry professionals. We need people growing inside of our industry to keep the restaurant business going. Just to really, and it was a televised thing that we did. We had all chefs and industry professionals in talking about rebuilding the industries right after the pandemic. So the group's called Medium Rare, and we're doing a tailgate. I said, I want to do a tailgate. And said, okay, what kind of tailgate? I said, I want to do a tailgate for 10,000 people. They go, what? I said, when you go to the Super Bowl, you have the NFL experience, which is awesome, private parties, which most people can't go to, and then you go to the Super Bowl. I said, the reason we tailgate as football fans is it's the camaraderie of hanging around the other fans. It's the warm-up to the big game.
Right.
And that's what, as a Raider, going to the pregame, going to the, you know, sitting in the parking lot, and we would leave Northern California to get to the Raider Stadium. We'd leave here at 5 in the morning to get down to get a good spot. That was the day. It was so much fun. But you can't tailgate at the Super Bowl because most people are from out of town, don't have the tailgate stuff. Parking's, you know, terrible. So I said, let's do this. So they said, okay, great. So we're doing an event. We have Diplo, great buddy of mine, Low Cash, Kristen Presley, great buddies of mine. They're going to perform. We got all kinds of food trucks, Triple D trucks, and great Arizona restaurants and chefs coming in. It's free for 10,000.
Nice.
People come. They
10,000 people.
They buy for the food trucks, buy for the beer. But Cash App is one of the sponsors. They're giving away my trash can nachos. Anybody that has Cash App on their phone, they're giving them free trash can nachos. There's games to be played, prizes to be won, free entertainment.
Love it.
It's right across the street from the Super Bowl. And we raised a bunch of money to put it on. And people are like, why would you do this? I'm like, because it's the greatest. It's American pastime. Everybody deserves to be able to celebrate the Super Bowl, whether or not you can buy a ticket or not. They're going to get the feeling, the energy, the electricity that goes on with Super Bowl. Now, we do have a VIP section over there where people buy tickets and do that whole thing. But the deal was, is when you got the opportunity and you got the power of the people and you got these businesses that want to be involved, why not flex on it?
Love it.
Get that shot. Give something.
Love
so that was the idea. So 11:30 to 4:30, right before the Super Bowl, and it's going to be awesome. I hope
the other thing I want you to promote real quick, it's my favorite show in the offseason, is Tournament of Champions. When's that air next?
Let me tell you, I built Tournament of Champions, again, on the same premise of why you do what you do, to help people. Yep. I've got all these amazing chef friends that have all this talent.
It is my favorite show. My favorite show.
It's a platform for them to kick ass on. So I built Tournament of Champions. Took me a long time to get the network to understand it. Like, not everybody's into sports. I go, right. Yeah, but they're into cooking sports. And this is what these are. There's your culinary athletes. February 19th, we're going to kick ass and take names. Season 4. And I promise you, it's gonna blow your mind. The stuff that comes, the chefs that are competing are just next level.
Incredible. And then I was with you we can't tell the story, unfortunately, but I brought Sean McVay to Guy's little house over there while he was filming Tournament of Champions one night. And, Guy knew a scoop before anybody else as we got into the booze a little bit there and, He became the best insider in America that night, but that's another story that we'll never be able to tell.
We won't, but I'll tell you what. I'm a Rams fan because of McVay, but I'll tell you something. What a neat guy. And Jay, you've introduced me. I gotta say this about you. You are magnetic. And the way you take your time and your energy and the way you share with other people, I hope you've explained sometime on this podcast about your son. It's probably when I try to explain who you are to people, because everybody thinks they know who you are. People Magazine did a thing with me and they said, you know, I'm not the guy you know or you think you know.
Right.
If anybody gets to really ever hear your story of who you are and what you've done as a dad, it is the most tear-jerking, drop you down. You look at yourself after you hear the Jay Glazer story and you go,
man,
are you serious?
I appreciate that.
It's really amazing. So hopefully.
And I haven't told people don't know that I adopted my son. I met him when he was 2 and adopted him years later. And yeah, he's,
but you're the sole person in his life and you're not his biological father. And you're not, I mean, I don't want to give
right.
the whole story back.
Please, at the
season finale of your podcast, please share that with people because really, man, where you dug that out of and
I appreciate
how you
that,
found
brother.
That inside of yourself is just another story.
Sometimes in life, you just got to do the right thing. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to have you on for a second episode at some point here. because that's what we're going to do. Because I haven't asked you in your unbreakable moment. We haven't gotten into the other deep stuff that we want to get into.
Anytime.
So somewhere along the lines, we're going to have episode two here. Good?
Hey, anytime, anywhere. We're down, and I love you. And I
love you, my brother.
I hope to see you next weekend.
Man, I always appreciate you walking this walk with me, my friend. Thank you.
Love and respect, buddy.
Hey, y'all. Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.